On today's episode, I speak to Peter Keynes, who is the Executive Director of Scotland The Big Picture. This is one of the largest conservation organizations in Scotland. We talk about rewilding Scotland and all the various conservation projects this organization is involved with. Tune in to the episode and don't forget to share and subscribe.
Welcome, Peter, to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on here today.
Thank you for having me.
How did Scotland, The Big Picture, come into being? And what is your long-term vision with this organization?
Well, our background, our core team background is in environmental communications. We worked for many years as filmmakers, photographers, writers, designers. And we started telling the story around rewilding in Scotland probably about 15 years ago now. And so we've been in this space a long time. And then our journey really accelerated about 5 years ago. We became a charity. We got involved with more practical rewilding. And now we're involved with arguably far too many things. I suppose our long-term vision is a rewilded Scotland. What does that look like? Well, it probably looks like a vast network of rewilded land and water across Scotland, where wildlife flourishes and people thrive. That's the holy grail. That's what we'd like to get to.
What is rewilding according to you and your organization?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it is fair to say that definitions of rewilding do vary. For us, it's an evolving process of nature recovery that leads to restored ecosystem health, function, and completeness. That's the official corporate version, if you like. But in essence, I would say that rewilding is anything that counteracts more dewilding, anything that joins up and enriches habitats rather than further fragment and degrade them, anything that leads to more nature and not less nature. I think that's rewilding in a nutshell.
Talk about the Northwoods Rewilding Network.
Yeah, so we do a big conference once every 2 years. And at our conference in 2019, we had three farmers come up to us afterwards and say, we love this rewilding stuff. How do you do it? And if I'm honest, we probably struggled to give them a coherent answer. And so we sat down for quite a number of months and planned how we might harness that appetite on the part of those three farmers. And that was the birth of the Northwoods Rewilding Network, which, if we fast forward to the present day, has now morphed from three farmers to 65 land partners across Scotland, a sort of series of ecological stepping stones, if you like, and now covering something like 15,000 acres. So, yeah, that's really, really accelerated over the last 3 years and shows me that the appetite for rewilding is really growing.
How has the rewilding movement progressed in Scotland?
Significant, I would say. Again, if you go back to that conference we did in 2019, our objective at that time, only, 4 years ago, was to mainstream rewilding, was to normalise it, if you like. And that conversation has evolved and matured beyond recognition since then, to the point where there's, you know, the rewilding space, if you want to call it that, in Scotland is getting pretty crowded. There are a lot of individuals and organizations all doing work at various scales and in various settings, but all really committed to the common aims of nature recovery. So I think the conversation in Scotland is really, really progressing rapidly.
Talk about the Why Not Scotland campaign.
So Why Not Scotland is part of a wider campaign that we're involved with. Why Not Scotland is actually a film that we've just finished filming, actually, and is now in post-production. It comes out in the new year. And the idea is that this film looks at the state of nature in Scotland through the eyes of a young Scot. And she asks herself, what does my future look like? You know, we've got climate breakdown, we've got a global biodiversity crisis. What does my future look like as a 21-year-old Scot? And she goes on a journey of discovery around Europe, where vast forests are being restored, where wetlands are being restored, where people live alongside lynx and wolves and bears, and really comes back and asks herself, why not Scotland? If this landscape scale recovery, rewilding, call it what you will, can happen in Europe, then why can't it happen in Scotland? And so the film is intended to provoke that conversation.
One of the most prominent projects in your organization is the Links to Scotland project. So why is it necessary to reintroduce the Links to Scotland? And what are some of the key hurdles facing this initiative?
Yeah, okay. I think it's probably debatable whether it's necessary to reintroduce Links. I don't think anybody's going to die if we don't. But it is, in our opinion, desirable and beneficial. We live in a country that has had no large predators for a fair few centuries now. We have a burgeoning deer population. That number of hungry mouths all nibbling away at the vegetation has an impact on ecosystems. So there's a strong ecological argument, I think, for bringing back Lynx. I would argue there's also a moral argument. We expect other countries to live alongside large predators, most of which are very much more challenging than lynx. We expect Africa to live with lions. We expect India to live with tigers. We expect Canada to live with polar bears. And indeed, we expect the rest of Europe to live with lynx. So it's not that we can't. There's plenty of habitat. There is plenty of food. It is that we won't. So I would argue there's a moral case for reintroducing lynx as well as an ecological one. The barriers are not really anything to do with lynx. Lynx could make a really good living here tomorrow if they were here. The barrier is people's attitudes, people's perceptions. As I say, we've not had large predators in the UK for a few centuries now. So we've grown used to life without them. We've grown used to life in a, I would argue, a sanitized, ecologically impoverished, sterile state. And so it's a real challenge, psychological and philosophical challenge, to bring back an animal that we're simply not familiar with. So the barriers are people barriers, really, not lynx barriers. And they're to do with people's perceptions and attitudes and values and priorities and motivations in life. And, you know, most of our work actually isn't with wildlife or habitats, it's with people. You know, we often say that rewilding is 20% ecology and 80% psychology. So yeah, most of my work is with, one way or the other, is with people and their value systems.
What is the current status of the Links reintroduction project, and what do you think is a way forward?
Well, it's a process. It's not only a social and a cultural process, as I alluded to, but it's also a legal process. So in the UK, if you want to reintroduce a native species, you have to apply for a license. In the case of Scotland, that license is granted by a body called Nature Scot, who's the government's environmental advisors. And there's a set of legal requirements that we as an applicant have to conform to. So we have to make the case that there is enough space and food for lynx. We have to make the case that it will bring benefits, not only ecological benefits, but also social and economic benefits. And we also have to prove that the conditions through which lynx became extinct are no longer present. And nobody knows for sure why lynx became extinct, but the likelihood is that it was a combination of excessive hunting and competition for habitat, persecution, you might argue. And we have to prove that those conditions are no longer present. And so part of the process, a big part of the process, is, and I use the word education lightly, but is educating the public in what is involved with living alongside lynx. So there's a legal process that we're involved with, that we're on that journey right now. But it's not a quick journey. It's not an easy journey. And as I say, most of it revolves around winning hearts and minds, really. It's a people journey much more than it is a lynx journey.
What about wolves? Do you think it is possible to reintroduce wolves to the UK, and why?
Yeah, I suppose if you'd have asked me about lynx maybe only 5 years ago, I would have probably said no. Now, if you ask me, I would say probably yes. I think it's a when rather than an if. Wolves are a different animal altogether, of course, and they're not only physically different, they also bring different cultural associations. So wolves is a real challenge, That said, wolves are now spreading across mainland Europe. There are wolves in Germany and France and Italy and Spain, even in really industrialized and heavily populated countries like the Netherlands and Belgium. So again, you know, it's not that we can't, it is that we won't. Again, wolves would make a good living here. But it is a big, big step to go from lynx, which in itself is a big step, to wolves. So I'm not saying never, but I'm 60 now. And so whether it will happen in my lifetime, I don't know. Let's get to lynx first before we make that jump to wolves. I think it's a big cultural and social and political step to get to lynx. I do think that will happen. Whether that would be a stepping stone to wolves, time will tell. So I think the jury's out on wolves for now.
So what are some other species which are really doing well after being rewilded to Scotland?
Well, again, if I look back, you know, 30 years, species like red kites have been reintroduced and are now prospering. White-tailed eagles have been reintroduced and are now prospering. More recently, of course, beavers were reintroduced. And just here in the Cairngorms, where I live, beavers are about to be returned to one of the major rivers running through the national park. So they're just three examples of species that have either recolonized and or been reintroduced. And there are other species as well, such as pine martens and otters and badgers, that have really bounced back in recent decades from historical lows. So there is something of a wildlife comeback happening across the whole of Europe. I would say it's probably happening more slowly and with species of lesser impact, shall we say, in Scotland. We're not talking wolves, lynx and bears. But nevertheless, the pathway, if you like, for species reintroductions has definitely been laid. And it will certainly make the likes of lynx easier on the back of historical reintroductions that have gone well, such as white-tailed eagles or beavers.
Talk about some of the training your organization provides in terms of rewilding.
So we have four focus areas, four objectives, if you like, that are laid down. And the first one is driving support for rewilding. And we do that through various mechanisms. As I mentioned earlier, we still make films. We still produce books and exhibitions and podcasts and newspaper articles and all of that sort of media output. So this is all part of driving support for rewilding. And the training that we provide is part of that too. We're literally just tomorrow, actually, about to start a rewilding communications training course. So this is for people from other organizations who are perhaps not experienced in communicating rewilding. It's a complex subject. They're perhaps scientists who know the technical side of ecological theory, but perhaps are not necessarily practiced in translating that science into accessible language. So this is really to equip other people outside of Scotland, the big picture, to benefit from the experience that we've had in the last 25 years of communicating rewilding. So yeah, it's an exciting period of our development, and hopefully by, what is it, next Friday, we'll have eight sort of rewilding champions, if you like, going out into the Scottish landscape and doing what we do, which is driving support for rewilding.
What are some other projects Scotland the Big Picture is involved with?
What other projects are we involved with? We have another species reintroduction project on the go called Cairngorms cranes. Cranes, for those that people that don't know, are wetland birds. They were again present in Scotland up until probably about the 1600s, and we want to try and introduce them back into the Cairngorms National Park for the first time in 400 or 500 years. We're involved with a new project, a new landscape scale rewilding project in the west of Scotland. This is really in its infancy, but it has huge potential, transformational potential. So it's kind of based on the same sort of model as Northwoods, but just on a bigger scale. So yeah, there's lots going on in the rewilding space, not only in Scotland, the big picture space, but across the whole of Scotland. And we're involved Not with everything by any means, but we have an eye and some involvement.
And how can individuals contribute to your organization?
Yeah, so if you go on our website, on our website it says what we do, which I've outlined, but it also offers a chance for people to contribute, not specifically to Scotland the Big Picture, but to rewilding. And we normally say three things. We normally say wild your space. So whatever space you have, that might be a garden, it might be an allotment, it might be access to school grounds or a cemetery, perhaps. And do your best to wild it. And there's lots of information out there, including on our website, how to do that. So wild the space that you control. Number two is make some noise. Most people don't realize that the UK is such a nature depleted nation. So we encourage people to speak to family, to friends, to work colleagues, and to tell that story, to tell the rewilding story and to articulate the benefits that it can bring. And the third thing is, put your money to work. And that doesn't just mean contributing to the likes of Scotland the Big Picture. It's also about consumer choices. You know, the food we buy, the clothes we buy, the travel that we invest in, these all have impacts on our natural environment. So the choices that you make in that regard dictates or influences at least the landscapes that we live in. So wild your space, make some noise, and put your money to work are the three things on our website that we ask people to do.
What have been some of the most prominent challenges you have faced, both in your organization and personally in your conservation career so far?
Yeah, I think the persistent challenge in Scotland, and I don't think it's unique to Scotland. I've travelled to quite a number of parts of the world, and the same story tends to come out over and over again. That there is a resistance to change. I think people generally don't like change. They certainly don't like change if they think that it's being forced upon them. And rewilding means change. It means doing things that very often have never been done before. So that makes people suspicious. It makes people wary. It makes people fearful. And we've grown used in the UK to the landscape that we live in. It's comfortable. It's familiar. We cherish it. And yet, ecologically speaking, it is impoverished. So this is as much a philosophical change in mindset as it is a physical change to the land and the sea. And I think that the challenge of change is the thing that is the most challenging in our organization and for rewilding more generally. And I think the other thing along similar lines, I guess, is that we've grown used to having control over every square inch of this country and all the creatures within it. So we've made it work for the benefit of just one species, us. And so the concept of relinquishing some control to nature and rewilding the landscape, that's pretty challenging for a lot of people. So I think, you know, in answer to your question, the challenge of change and the fear of loss of control are two factors, two barriers that we have to deal with on a daily basis.
What have been some of your most prominent lessons from your conservation career so far?
I suppose that I used to imagine that wildlife management was about wildlife, naively. I quite quickly learned that wildlife management, rewilding, ecological restoration, nature recovery, call it what you will, actually has very little to do with wildlife. It's all to do with people. It's back to that 20% ecology and 80% psychology. So I think the lessons that I've learned really haven't been ecological lessons. You know, they haven't been about the intricacies of predator-prey dynamics. They've been about people and how people's brains work, how their hearts work. And if I've learned anything, it's that people are complex creatures. The values that they hold dear, the belief systems that govern what they think and what they believe, who they are, what they stand for, they're extremely complicated. But the reality is that in order to affect change, and rewilding is change, we have to understand people. We have to know or at least have a clue about what buttons we need to press, what levers we need to pull in people's minds to facilitate behavioral change. And that's the holy grail, really. That's where we're all trying to get to, a fundamental change in our relationship with nature. That's a massive societal shift in mindset. But that's the journey we're on. I think the journey is a positive one. There's lots of good things happening, but yeah, this is a process that's going to span my lifetime and beyond.
And my final question for you today is that what has been some of your most memorable moments from your conservation career?
Well, I was privileged for 25 years to work as a conservation photographer, and you know, some of the encounters with wild animals that happened as a result of that work are etched on my mind. You know, I can remember the first time I saw a bear in Finland. I can remember coming face to face with a wolf in America. And I can remember, you know, more simple things like sitting in my hide in the forest, just a matter of a couple of hundred meters from where I'm sitting now, having a red squirrel come down, you know, in gently falling snow. So I have been really privileged to have witnessed some beautiful, unique, immersive moments with wild creatures. And that stays with you. And it helps to shape my values as an individual and what I believe to be right and wrong and what I now, I suppose, choose to fight for. So yeah, I think close encounters with wild animals, of which I could name many, have been really, really fundamental in what I now believe is a cause that's worth fighting for, and that in my case is rewilding.
So that was the final question I had for you today. Thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure speaking to you about your work.
No problem. Good to speak to you, Anish.